Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me this week on our latest trip to Albuquerque and beyond, well, first, the woman who can work a room almost as competently as Aaron, the legal associate, it's Jamie.
Hey, Scott. Nice to be here.
And the guy who would disagree with Cliff Maine and only let Aaron, be a paralegal, it's Brian. Hey, Brian.
That's me, part of the patriarchy, baby.
That's right. The man who gives reality checks to all the law shows.
Just don't cash them till I get paid.
That whole Law and Order thing is bullshit. Anyway, actually, it's only three of us this week. Oh, look at that. Yeah, Dan is away on a trip that Brian and I have attended in the past, but we couldn't do it this time around. So Dan will carry the flag for us, and we will just be here recording a podcast instead. So there you go. Speaking since I mentioned Aaron in the intros there, I was, and I get to finally use this fucking phrase, I was today years old when I realized that the actress who plays Aaron on Better Call Saul actually plays the little psycho Joe on the criminally not discussed and lauded enough show Mythic Quest, the one I've told you to need to check out. I didn't realize it was her. I've watched them, you know, back to back. Like, then I saw her. I saw it in IMDb. I was like, "Wait a minute, what?" Yeah, so, a very different part for her. Let's just put it that way. But we're not here to talk about a show that no one else has watched. We're here to talk about the fifth episode of the final season of Better Call Saul, and that episode is Black and Blue. Kind of like my hand right now. Directed by Melissa Bernstein. She'll actually be directing next week's episode as well. And it was written by Allison Tatlock, who has actually written three previous Better Call Saul episodes. But perhaps just as cool, she also wrote three episodes of the great Halt and Catch Fire series. Now, before we dive in, I just wanted to say something right off the top here. And I haven't talked to you guys about the episode before, like right now, so I don't know what your views or opinions are, but I'm sure we'll find out shortly. And that's usually the case when we approach these things. But I'm at the outset, you know, one reason only, I didn't hate this episode, but I'm not going to tell you that I love this episode either. I mean, last week when we talked about Hit and Run, it was kind of, I referred to it as kind of a breather episode, you know, allowed us to exhale after the tense Rock and Hard Place episode. To have this episode follow that one, it kind of, in my, you know, not so humble opinion, it felt a little bit like an overextension of that exhalation to me, so to speak. It's not that, there's good things in this episode. I'm not saying it's a bad episode. But let me put it this way. There have been 55 episodes of Better Call Saul. And if I'm ranking all 55 episodes of Better Call Saul, let's put it this way. This one's coming in the 50s. Maybe 55. It's definitely in the 50s.
Yeah, it wasn't, I don't know, after the first few episodes we had this season that have just been phenomenal, it's hard to set this one up against it. Though, like you said, there's some great stuff in it. There's some great stuff, and there's some like incredibly great stuff in it. But it's the pausing between all of those things wasn't the same rhythm we were following for the first couple mm-hmm. episodes.
I mean, as we talk about it, I'll cite the things as we go through them. The things that made me go, But there's certainly stuff that made me go, ooh, as well. So you got that.
Yes.
And this to me was like a snack and not a meal.
Yeah. There it is. And I think it's one of those things where if you're used to going to like a great restaurant every week and then they just hit you with just like, wait, that's it? Tapas? Are you kidding me? come on. Anyway.
Was it suggested that you tried the signature sauces? Maybe that would spice up this meal from a snack to a meal.
I don't do spicy. I cannot do this. Oh boy. Anyway, so we'll get into the episode, and I'm sure we'll hit upon other silly things as the conversation moves forward. The more my hand bothers me with this mouse, I'm gonna package two characters together here into one conversation. So some of you out there might think they have little or nothing to do with each other, nothing in common, and so on. But I'm gonna say, and it might speak to some of my minor issues with the episode, that there is some deliberate mirroring of principal players here. And I'm talking about Kim Wexler and Gus Fring. Now, we spend, in my opinion, twice in one podcast already I've said that phrase, we spend an inordinate amount of time with Kim up front, with her being nervous, she's anxious, she's preoccupied now that she has the knowledge that Lala is alive. You know, yeah, she does push forward later on with her scheming plans when she's meeting with her former assistant there, you know, and she gets some info on Sandpiper. And there is some dramatic portent, both when she says to that woman, you know, she's just getting started, or later during a conversation with Jimmy when she drops the, you know, it's coming next thing. But I just, you know, if I went back and I started counting up the minutes, I was like, even if it's only 2 minutes or three, that's a lot of screen time. It sounds like a little, but it's a lot. And then you combine that with Gus, his actions at Los Pollos Hermanos. He's more controlled and restrained than she is, but it's also speaking to about his nerves, his paranoia, you know, the way he's fastidiously fixing things and walking through walking through the restaurant. And you hear like the conflicting. Okay, you know, let me pause myself here because I realize I've said it twice. So my apologies to the listeners. If you hear me making references to like some sort of odd injury or pain, I'm the dumbest smart person ever. I'm known for occasionally getting mad when I'm playing darts, and maybe I might punch a wall occasionally. A couple of nights ago, and we were winning all the games. I don't know why I was mad about one turn. In quick succession, I punched a wall, the back of a chair, and a door. It was like bing, bang, boom. And then within a minute, we all watched as my fist became had like the Hulk fist thing going on, where we just watched a big purple egg just slowly grow on my hand, like in real time. It was bizarre. I can move it and all, so I don't think I've broken any fingers, because I know what that's like. But there's something going on, because there's swelling and discoloration, and the bruise has actually gone through to the other side of my hand, which is interesting. So, but I can do everything that one needs their right hand to do so far that I've tried, so it's not too bad. But I may be getting an x-ray tomorrow. So, just got that out of the way. I don't like dropping personal stuff in the podcast, but there you go. I still have to ask.
Now they know. Now they know.
Oh, dear. So I was in the middle of talking about Gus. Oh, when he's talking about the way he's acting, you've got that little buzzing, conflicting thoughts drowning out the customer's order, you know, and he eventually, you know, even goes outside. Again, it's not that it's a bad sequence of events or moments with him. It's interesting. But part of me was going, oh, you're taking up a lot of screen time with this. And, you know, yeah, later he does press forward when he takes that trip with Mike and to the super lab and whatever. And there is some stuff that happens there, which we'll talk about. But it was one of those things on one, if I want to be Mr. Glass Half Full with the episode, I'm like, oh, it's kind of interesting that we're watching two very different characters, both, you know, dealing with the thought and knowledge that Lala is alive and how it impacts them. And then the negative, the glass half empty part of me was going, wow, this feels really obvious to me. And I don't, the shows in the Vinceverse for me tend to be a bit more subtle than that. And I thought this was kind of really like hitting it, hitting me over the head a little bit with what was happening. Or maybe I was just in a negative mood when I was watching because of my hand. I don't know. Jamie, you can take the other point of view or however you... I like disagreeing with you guys, so it's kind of cool. So,
okay. It was really obvious, and his little, like... His walk through the kitchen, his need to control, you know, to keep an eye on everything. But I really did love when he's, you know, he's like focused on everything. He's like laser focused, looking at, you know, as he's going by all these employees that are just like so well behaved. You know, anybody who's worked in an actual kitchen, like that ain't how it goes. like there's no like one person at the fryer like meticulously flipping everything in order so nice and neat. But if you work for Gus, it's how it's done. But I really did like the laser focus, and then seeing him go out front and just kind of like go fuzzy. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff was we've kind of seen it and so on, but it stands as a reminder for those who liked Breaking Bad. I think it's kind of cool to see. We know that something has to happen with Lalo that makes Gus in the future feel confident and not have to be worried about what's behind him at the level that he is right now. We get to see that he wasn't always so confident and sure of everything, because we're seeing him have it's basically like a Gus panic attack. Like, that's what you get from a Gus panic attack. So it was kind of neat to see a little bit past that wall and that, you know, that straight face exterior, like I have everything together thing that we always see with him, you know, straighten the tie and move forward. We got to see him freak out for a minute without saying a word, you know, just with an audio cue. But I really enjoyed it, no matter how very like in your face, like this is what we're telling you. I did like it.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. That's totally fair. Again, my feeling is I'm being critical of something that it's not that it's bad. Mm-hmm. I guess here's what's happening, and I'm probably would be like this about any show that's in its final season specifically. You know, I love the economy of storytelling, and when you're doing something which I feel you're taking up time and significant amount of time in any one given episode, we've only got a few episodes left to go, yes. So to speak.
Yes.
And I felt like, was this net? What did I get that much more about these characters here? A little, but I feel like I kind of got that about Gus and his situation with Lalo before this episode had already happened. So it felt like you're just right. Doubling down on something I already knew. Was it? But if I was going to defend it, it's kind of like when I was arguing with someone about when you're making a change in a screenplay or a story, you know, it better impact plot, it better impact character, or it better be entertaining. And even if I didn't feel that it really moved the needle much as far as plot or character for me personally, I will say I was entertained. It's actually, it's almost regrettable that Dan is not here tonight, because we could have gotten his insight, being someone who's familiar with, you know, a fast food chicken restaurant and the goings on. And either, I believe he would have given us a blow by blow, you know, accurate. Like, well, I don't know if I would touch the visors like that, but,
And it also would have been good because Jimmy refers to himself as the Colonel.
Yes. Oh yeah.
I mean, yes.
I did like when he had, again, it's just a throwback to, I really feel like this wasn't put in there because it really pushed our story along. I think this whole scene was there just as sort of like a little added like nod to the restaurant, because it's probably, I think there's a good chance we don't really see inside of it much ever again. And the moment where he kind of like took a deep breath and he walked out to the front of the restaurant into the parking lot was such a throwback to Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And I feel like more than anything, I like to think that's why the writers put it there. It was just like the little nod of this is where we're headed.
If I could interject, sorry, I just want to say, I think sort of a corollary of that's true. I think we saw it because Lalo's the last impediment to Gus becoming the Pollos Hermanos guy from Breaking Bad, and I think that.
Yeah, he's gonna level up. He's gonna level up in his game once we get through what's coming.
Well, it's interesting because when you bring up, and obviously the further we go along with Better Call Saul, with each successive episode, it becomes that much more difficult to really pry it away from Breaking Bad because it's become so intertwined with that. So one could see, like what you were just saying with Gus Fring, there's a lot of similarities and parallels to him in the sequence to Walter White and, you know, how he's reacting, the buzzing, drowning out everything, whatever. And you could therefore extrapolate to the way Kim is acting and being nervous and she's smoking. Where have I seen that before? Blown, nervous about, you know, possible threats and smoking. Oh, I know. Except this is a beloved character and that was a more, for whatever reason, polarizing character, unfortunately, for her. What's interesting though is this, and another thing that they both have in common, therefore, is despite their concerns, well, more for hers, despite her concerns, because his concern, what he's doing is directly related to his concerns, they're still pressing forward with whatever plans or things they want to put into motion. Obviously, with her, it's about the Sandpiper situation. But with him, and this is where the intriguing thing comes up, is like it's when he goes to basically the site of the super lab, what's going to be the super lab with Mike, and then he starts doing some interesting business there. That was one of the two or three very intriguing things about the episode overall. It's like, what's he up to here? What's he plotting? I guess we kind of know what it is. But again, if it's what we think he's doing, then once again, Gus has magical powers. It's very prescient considering what we see Lalo doing later on in the episode, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
but how would he know? I don't know. Superpower.
How does he know things? How does he know these things?
So, since we're talking a little bit about Kim here, let me just throw this at you so you guys have a talking point here. So, I was on the Book of Faith the other day, and I happened to come across some comments on another group page, and people were talking about Jimmy. I was about to say Jim and Kimmy. I was really about to do that. Jimmy and Kim's relationship. And in this, one person's opinion was, who had brought it up actually, that the thing that's sustaining the relationship at this point is the scheme, is what's going on between them. And she felt that there wasn't much else there, which is also why it's, you know, the death toll is coming for the death, not an actual death, but, you know, doom is going to come to this relationship, and maybe it's more about the thrill of the con for Kim or what have you. She was kind of going along those lines. I don't really agree with that assessment, although I understand what she was saying. I think it's about far more than that, but I figured, especially since we're in the final season, the relationship between these two is kind of one of the core things about the show at this point. So I was curious how you guys saw their relationship. And I don't mean just some sort of analytical, they're codependent. I just wanted to hear what you two thought of it, as far as what the genuine feelings or emotions are between these two and what they mean to each other and that whole thing. So that way people can listen to you guys talk. So go for it, Jamie.
I don't really agree with, I mean, I can see some points that she's making, but I don't really agree with that. Like, that's what their relationship is at this point. They're together because they get each other and they're best friends. And when you are around somebody for any length of time and you, okay, like, let's face it. Like, Jimmy has some maybe less than admirable qualities by those that he works with, like, you know, from the eyes of those who work with him and stuff. He's, you know, the slipping Jimmy thing is always just right there. But I think for somebody like him, who has, as we've talked about before, has always has such control, and her demeanor is always that of being controlled and calm, and just, again, mirroring in the Gus thing, since we were talking about that earlier, not seeing past what she's showing you. But Jimmy's the opposite of that. He's like, you're going to, you know, he's feeling something when he's feeling something. And he, you know, he kind of just always swings for the fences with whatever idea he has. And to her, his ability to let go of some of that control, to just go for it, like the craziest, zaniest, most dangerous, dumbest plans, and he's just like, he backs himself, he's confident with his ideas, and he just goes for it. And I think she's always admired that in him, and now she's like kind of letting go of that control, and she's sort of, you know, for a while she was letting go of that control and just kind of like really getting into and kind of like enjoying this, like, it's so cliche to say, but like kind of enjoying this bad girl side of everything, and the feeling, the freedom of like putting people in their place and not having to be so precise about just getting to be like Jimmy. And she probably feels in some ways at some point it impressed him a little bit, that she was kind of like, yeah, I can dip my toe in this and see what I'm capable of doing. Like, when they could kind of, again, we go back to the bottle top, you know, like that was a trophy of one of those moments where she dipped her toe in there and she was damn good at that kind of thing, and he admired her for it, and then they brought a trophy home. And I think it just started with that. And I think it's just rolling up and up and uphill. And now she's back into that place where she's going to have control, kind of have control, keep the demeanor, keep it going. And the struggle is starting to form, because just like she knows Jimmy, Jimmy knows her. And the things that he's always admired about her really haven't been, she isn't showing some of those same qualities that he always admired in her, and maybe she kind of like threw to the wayside, like it wasn't important enough. But maybe that's where the struggle is. But at the end of the day, they're together because they love each other and they like each other and they're friends with each other, and they can see the world around them and the hypocrisies in the world around them with the same set of eyes. And so that's why we always see her, like, big laugh smiling around him and not around anybody else, because she can really just be herself with Jimmy. But now she's kind of rolling into a place that maybe isn't herself, and you can tell it's stressing him.
I think it's just her, what she likes about him. She has and now she's becoming a version of him, like, yeah. When he returned from the desert and didn't tell her, didn't want to talk to her. Now she has a piece of information. She thinks it is protecting him to not tell him.
Right.
But I think the love and affection and appreciation for each other is there. I think both of them think they see something in the other person that the rest of the world doesn't see. And I don't think that's been, I don't think that's been damaged in any way.
No, I agree. I don't think that part has been damaged at all. And the secrets that they're keeping from each other, though, they I guess it's like positive toxicity, because it's really dangerous. The secrets they're keeping from each other is incredibly dangerous, but neither one of them is, it's okay. It's not like when Walt kept secrets from Skyler because of his own like selfish desire to not let go of the path he's like the control and the power he's starting to gain. They're literally keeping secrets from each other because they think the other person would be better off not knowing. Like, they want to try to protect each other from that like awful truth that's looming over them, like the little thundercloud that follows them. They're just trying to shield the other person from having to suffer it.
And I would give Kim the benefit of the doubt that, I mean, she probably thinks Mike is a competent enough guy.
Yeah.
About it, and doesn't have to know.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously it's obvious that she wouldn't be telling Jimmy about the Lalo information, because he would just revert back to the way he was when he came out of the desert.
Yeah.
and everything.
Right.
And he's finally coming out of that, or he's, I mean, he's still somewhat, he still feels like a more understated version of himself when he's with her as of late, but he's definitely coming along. So yeah, look, it's a trope of all, even decent dramatic shows where most of the drama is based on people keeping secrets from each other. Because every other show would not exist. You know, how many shows have we watched? Like, you know, if everyone just told people stuff, you wouldn't even have a show anymore. You know, it doesn't matter.
Well, it's the thing that, like, you know, 25, 35 years ago, the problem always arises because no one could get to a phone. And now we have to keep secrets because we all have the phone.
Everybody lies. Everybody keeps secrets. It's just the nature of it. We just dress things up more now, but they're all soap operas. Yes. At the end of the day, no matter what people choose to believe.
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I thought it was funny when we see him trying to put on the makeup to cover up his bruises later on, and thinking like,
yes, to know if it's going to work.
So wait a minute. Has every character in the Vinceverse at some point put makeup on their face to hide bruises? Because we certainly saw Jesse do that. It's funny, whenever I put Breaking Bad on Netflix, it always defaults to that picture of Jesse putting the makeup under his eye for some reason, no matter what season or episode. I don't know why they picked that still shot. Of course, Walt has done it. I think Mike actually put makeup on a bruise at one point, if I'm not mistaken. It's just one of those things, like, oh, here we go, you know, take a shot.
And I got to tell you, like, it isn't easy to cover any, like, dark pigmented, like, spots on one skin with just a little bit of concealer and foundation. Like these guys going in there without, I mean, I'm assuming they haven't been practicing and putting makeup on every single day of their life for 20 years, but I mean, somehow they managed to make it work. And it is also very, very amazing that their significant other is always the exact color match. Just saying.
I was actually going to say none of them actually do it all that well, but okay.
It doesn't look like a professional job.
So that's why in your drama, Scott, you should cast Robert Smith of The Cure to be, you know, one of the leads. And he would apply his makeup with great aplomb.
Oh, Lordy.
I don't want to show bruises anymore.
and they also...
What's wrong with you, Robert? Today you only have one black eye.
I'm not sad enough.
Well, you know, well, I would call him now, but it's Thursday, and we know that he doesn't care about Thursdays, you know. I can be hip anyway. I also thought it was funny. It was a very sly little thing they got away with there, not got away with it, that they plugged in there with him putting on the makeup and her making the joke, or not really making a joke, actually kind of being serious, I thought.
Yeah.
It's like, no, go with the bruise. You know, I'm Saul Goodman, and I'll fight for you, pal. It's like, And the very first time, when we see a commercial on Breaking Bad, what is he saying? I'm so good, but I'll fight for you. Speaking of which, actually, I should mention, because I said earlier that the title of the episode is Black and Blue, and, you know, you're wondering if they're referring to Jimmy's bruises, of course, or is it a wink at the season 2 episode of Breaking Bad, which was titled Negro y Azul, which is Black and Blue, and that episode actually aired just before the Better Call Saul episode. So I started going, ooh, could that mean the next episode is going to be a momentous one in the Saul Goodman timeline? And I saw the ad, like, maybe, I don't know.
There was a lot of numbers, and there was a lot of theories going on this week all over the World Wide Web about all of these numbers and these really long camera shots setting on the numbers. Like her alarm clock and something about how the reflection in the, like, it showed the reflection of the alarm clock and it said lie in the reflection. And then well, and we saw it too, when we panned over to like Gus's like hideout home, you know, and it showed his address on there. And then the boxing ring, like they had like a huge sign, and the majority of the sign was the building number. So I don't know. And seeing as we got that like little tease, you know, before the season started with the numbers being laid out at the crime scene, I can understand why people are like digging and trying to find out what some of this means. But I don't know. I haven't come up with anything.
Okay, someone needs to tell these people it's not fucking Lost. It's not what they're doing. And the thing with the
this is what happens and the when thing you they did get with, people calling phone numbers and finding secret codes. And what season was it when Gus came back? Like the first letter in the every title. So like this is going to lead people into digging. They let us down this.
Oh yeah, but it's digging for cute, silly stuff. It's not for anything of any meaning. You know, the ad was basically just to tell us what the date was the show was coming back. That's all that was about, you know,
it's all fun and games till a pizza parlor in Albuquerque gets invaded. Okay,
right. There you go. You're right. There it is.
So since we've brought up the boxing thing a few times, let's talk about Howard, and that'll be my next issue with the episode. So first we have that scene between Howard and Cliff Main, and that's where Howard picks up on what's been going on, and who's in his mind, at least at this point, who's behind all these things that have been going on and what he has to do about them. It's going to be more interesting when he actually finds out, oh, guess what? Someone else is equally responsible. Which leads to Jimmy going to, you know, almost felt like, don't tell me he's going to an abandoned warehouse because, you know, please let's not do that trope. But, you know, that's something right out of Arrow. Please let's not do that. But, yeah, it kind of was. But it's always like, oh, no, it's a gym. No, whatever.
It's a gym.
And
gloves.
Howard is there, and obviously he challenges him to a boxing match, maybe just to get it out of their system, maybe whatever. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. I get there's entertainment value here. It's a fun thing to watch the scene. I get that. I get it. But I'm going to be negative here. Oh my God. I've seen this so many damn times in my life. This has been the plot. I've seen this as a plot of I don't know how many sitcoms and dramatic series, whatever, time after time after time.
Fight it out.
And one can say, oh, that makes sense. Cause Howard Kimball was like, no. That's not an excuse. The show did it. The writers did it. They still did it. Don't tell me, oh, that's just the way Howard would think. That doesn't work for me. Because I just felt, I rarely ever say I'm not buying something, and I kind of wasn't buying this. I wasn't even buying that Howard would know this guy who, this creepy, whatever, non-speaking gym owner, who seems kind of like, you know, shady to say the least. It's like,
what was his name? Like Mickey or something?
I feel like, and I know someone, could be one of you, can try to easily explain it away, and I'm just going to look at you like, really? Because I've seen Howard's clients, and we know what his client base is. They're not people like that. They're not. Jimmy might have a client like that, but Howard wouldn't. I'm sorry. So I found it a little, it's strained. I'm not going to say I didn't believe it, but it was like, okay, I'll go along with this because I'm enjoying Patrick Fabian on the show and it's kind of thing. But I know this scene isn't going to go anywhere. I know, and I just got a little disappointed in it. That's just me. Maybe everyone else might feel differently out there, but I was kind of like, really?
All right, I'm going to throw this out, if I may. First of all, the ref, the gym owner, his name was Mackie, which, I'm sorry, is the perfect name for somebody else. Boxing gym, and it's almost too perfect, but nonetheless, I move on. I agree with everything you're saying, but just for fun, let's ponder the idea that, without stretching too far, that Howard would know exactly what it would take to get Jimmy in one place so that the PI that is going to be following him knows exactly who he's dealing with, what his car looks like, and what the person he's following looks like. And maybe it was this PI guy's plan. Like, go over to this place. We can get a good look at him. I don't know. Maybe that's digging too far. But at the end of the day, the real point wasn't to box it out and feel better about it. Like, let's fight this out and maybe you're going to feel better. I never got the feeling that Howard really felt anything on that. I felt Howard did it as a complete setup for Jimmy to think that everything was in the clear, to let him know that he knew, but to think, okay, we boxed out. Now Howard thinks that we're in the clear, because Howard doesn't necessarily want him to stop whatever he's moving. He wants to catch him doing whatever he's doing. And so I think this whole thing was just a ruse, like planned by Howard, because he knew this is what Jimmy would fall for. That's my thought.
I agree with, I liked Howard's dialogue. I didn't like the setting or the plan. Like, to me, this would have been more realistic if Howard was like one of those douchebag jujitsu.
Yeah.
Roll on the mat and do jujitsu.
Yeah,
that would be more realistic to the character of Howard. Yeah. But like what he said to him and the way he said, I liked all that. I just was kind of not down with the setting of it.
I also have to say, it's something kind of watching like Howard, what Howard's getting like the last good punches in, like he's fighting nobody and like, I think if you really set the two of them up side by side, this would not turn out the way with Jimmy on his back. I just don't think that that's necessarily true. But again,
I think Howard would kick his ass.
I think Howard would kick his ass too.
So?
I want to ask you guys a question.
In the Saw world, yes. But as the actors go, like, I'm just like, saying, as actors, it's funny because we just watched Odenkirk and something where he just went and like kicked the crap out of a whole bus full of hooligans. So then we see like someone like Howard in his like, you know, little white and blue shirt just like beat him down. It's like, what? This is not how this is supposed to go.
I'm probably going to think more of the previous 35 years or whatever it's been of watching Odenkirk do stuff than the one goofy John Wick style movie from last year. I'm going to be more thinking about, I'll be thinking about it as the porn actor.
Let me ask you guys a question.
One of the Salamanca twins, I'm not sure which actor, the word is that one of them actually had to do that training so that... Yeah. Howard looked like he had been a...
I think it was Luis Moncada.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So, I want to ask this question. Watching this scene, did you wonder if this is maybe where he had his heart attack?
I had wondered about that, but what is said is based on who our directors are. It is either episode 2 or episode 12, because it was Vince who was there on the set that day.
But they do shoot stuff out of order. Yes,
for sure. So it's going to be, it would be kind of hard.
And I hadn't even thought about it till this scene. But there was just something visceral about it.
I think I've heard that some people have speculated about that. I'm gonna say no. The setting of his heart attack and everything was outdoors,
Oh,
when it
okay.
happened, as far as I can recall. And while they will shoot things at, obviously they can shoot things out of sequence, out of scene, or even out of episode. My impression was still it was fairly late in the run of the
That's what
show.
I felt too, like that it was, it seemed like they were almost wrapping it up when it happened, because it wasn't but maybe 3 weeks after his return that they were like done.
It just seems odd to me to think that it would be. I mean, I can, again, don't know anything for sure, but it just seems it is the fifth episode of, was it 13? It's gonna be 13 episodes. And it seemed like they were like in, they maybe had like maybe a month left of shooting to go or something, but it just delayed everything by that much. I could be wrong about that, but it's just from
And it
what
was
I
something
remember being
like
told.
5 hours. It was something like 5 hours after they were done shooting that day. So they weren't shooting when it happened. But whatever was shot that day is still being used. So I have heard that. They also said anybody who has a keen eye could kind of see he was off color that day. So like you might be able to tell he's not like feeling hot. But it didn't happen until 5 hours after cameras were rolling.
I'll give you this with your I don't know what to call it, that your take on it before Jamie, what I think I will agree with. I don't agree with the part about setting up just so the PI could get a look at him or whatever.
Yeah, I mean that was a little bit of a stretch, but
That's a huge
I
stretch.
truly,
What I
truly
do
believe Howard was just throwing some bullshit
that
his
I
way.
believe that to lead him to think that he would think it's all over and just walk away from it. I'll go that I can go along with. Everything else, no. Here's a photo there. Here's his
Yeah,
address.
like I said,
That's not
if
really.
you rewind and listen, I think that was a stretch and probably
Oh, I
just
know. I heard you.
me going. But I really
I just
like
want to
Howard
underscore
knew
it.
what he was doing. One, Howard wanted to just fucking hit him
Well,
straight up,
that I was
obviously. But
waiting for you to say
then,
that.
like, he's all like, there, now maybe it's out of your system or her. Now, like, go play. Like,
But
go
did Jimmy
play.
stop and go back in?
On my end, your audio is dipping in and out, Brian, so I didn't hear what you said. I
On
apologize.
that
Oh,
one too.
sorry. I said, but on his end, did Jimmy go turn and go back in to get hit and take an ass kicking and not fight as hard as he could?
Maybe
Because when
it's
Kim
like he's
says
trying
you
to
went
figure out
back
what to say.
in, because you know what's coming next. Does Jimmy try to give Howard a pound of flesh?
Kim thinks so.
I don't
Kim
know.
thinks what it is, you know,
I
that it was
don't
a feeling a little bit guilty, so you let yourself take some hints.
I guess we could go that direction, although this, considering what he did to Howard in relation to how he made him feel about the death of Chuck, I have a hard time be like, oh wait, so now you have a conscience about something?
Yeah, I feel like he
You
just
know
straight up turned around and went back because he's Jimmy and he couldn't say no. Like, he just
Well,
couldn't help
he's
himself.
also thinking of himself. He's still, but I'm the scrappy underdog who came from the streets. Of course, I can take this snooty suit, blah blah blah. And they're like, oh yeah, but you know what? You're not skilled at physical combat. So.
These guys like really just, I mean, like they just the level of disdain they have for this guy is, I don't know.
Oh,
Sometimes it's really tragic, and then other times it's hilarious. But it's just like, I mean, yeah, he definitely has his douchey moments, but like really, he's not really an issue.
well, I think, I believe we covered this on a previous podcast, and I think a big point of all this is if Kim and Jimmy are scheming against someone who's just an awful person, then there's no then we have no conflict. We don't have a problem with it.
We're just rooting for it. We're rooting for the
But
takedown.
we've seen time and time again, as it was revealed over the course of the last five seasons, Howard's not a bad guy. Howard's not to blame for Jimmy's troubles. His brother was. you know? And he's actually tried to do right by him, and or felt horrible about the death of the brother at that other time. He's practically, you know, borderline suicidal at that time. You know, maybe his relationship with Kim was a little strained because the way he viewed her, or the way she felt he viewed her. I don't know, but does any of it warrant what they apparently seem to be planning to do? I don't think so. I don't think anybody thinks that at that point. I think that's, this is why it's the version of, this is why we're saying that Kim is Breaking Bad.
Well, and I think, I mean, I know we haven't jumped into that scene yet, but I think the little moment that we got with the whole sandpaper thing gave us just a little salt on the rim, you know, with Howard's character. And yes, at the end of the day, he's still going to push a room full of senior citizens to hold on to life a little bit longer so we can get a bigger pay.
Right. But what he does in that scene, that's what he's supposed to do.
Yes. It's his job. It's what he's going to do.
And here's the thing. There is nothing different about what Howard does in that room with those senior citizens than anything Jimmy had done. And at least what Howard is doing, comparatively speaking, is a hell of a lot more on the up and up. He's talking about the realities of a lawsuit and whatever, and that, you know, you do have to wait, whatever. Jimmy was doing, we know what turned out to be.
Just feeling bad. Stars in their eyes, right?
So, but that is a good thing to bring up, because that is kind of, it's also, even though he's not in a courtroom, it still, to me, is one of our rare times to kind of see Howard in action. You know, it's like, yes. Oh,
yep.
Howard can't, don't forget, there's a reason why Howard is a partner, whatever. He can be a very persuasive, well-spoken guy.
Yes.
Especially compared to, you know, like the way, you know, the non-paralegal Erin was. And
she tried her best.
I know.
She was doing okay, but man, she was getting in deep there.
But, yeah, and also, it is kind of fun to watch, for me personally, being someone who's been around a little while, and you know, Brian, maybe you might relate to this, I don't know. It's kind of fun seeing Ed Begley Jr. in all these scenes, and he's really playing it so very straight, because I grew up watching him on St. Elsewhere, yes. All the way through that to his silly character on Arrested Development, and like the parking lot scene between him and Howard, and realizing, as we're saying all this stuff out loud, does it not occur to you that this is kind of, when you put it all together, it does sound kind of ridiculous and over the top. And yes. And he just happens to be sitting there with Kim at an outdoor cafe. It's one of those things, like, it's not the best plan. he should be seeing through this, but he's not. It's like, really, the day after some of Jimmy's ex-clients are here, now he sees this when he's sitting with Kim, doesn't put that together. Not the smartest lawyer.
Just too trusting.
That's what
just
the beauty of that trusting. Scene was, though, is that you see why Howard's mind, and he puts it, he starts questioning it, and he solves it in about 2 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. Yeah, the facial expression that completely read, like, oh, fucking course. it was good.
You don't gotta be Encyclopedia Brown to figure out that one. You know, you have to be Charlie Brown to figure out that one. It's pretty freaking obvious.
And I think as viewers, we've kind of just, like, there's just this little part of us that just kind of wanted to see him figure it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Everything you say is true. But it did require him to ask the kind of question only somebody who's really smart asked, is who were you with when you saw this?
Yep.
And that's the answer. Like,
yep, there
like
it was.
He cut right through the bullshit and got right down to brass tacks. And that is the answer.
good.
So wait a minute. So you saw something that looked like something with a prop. Who's done a scheme which involved a fake, you know, doing something with prostitutes with me before? Can't think of who might have done that before.
It's all feeling familiar.
So one, well, at least, well, we there may be more as we, you know, things pop into our head. But one more question before I move on to the get to the Lalo stuff. And it's maybe it's just speculation. So we see at the end of that thing that the whole thing is that he hires a PI. Okay, fine.
Yes.
Cliche. Sorry.
Hey, somebody's got to get the deets, man. Someone's got it. He's only got 1 week off. He's got to get a lot done. He's got to get a lot done in that week. It's got to matter. He needs backup.
The big question is this. So the implication is this guy's going to be following them around, following yes. Jimmy around. Mike's yep. guys are supposed to be following them around.
Yep.
Are these two things going to intersect and possibly blow up or something?
Absolutely they will. Okay, absolutely.
And that's how we start to cross these storylines over. I'm very curious about how they'll handle yes. that.
Yeah. There's just no way that doesn't happen.
That would be strange.
Yeah, that's perfection. And I want to give you a callback, Scott. I want to give you credit when before you had said like you thought maybe Kim did something with an agenda when she was having a conversation. I think there's proof of that you're probably right this week when Kim talks to the associate that comes to the diner mm-hmm. and okay, meets yep. with her. Because when she goes back and meets with Jimmy, she tells Jimmy like she found out what she wanted from her. Mm-hmm. And that associate is saying nice things to her, like, we can't believe you left, but we admire you for what you did. And yep. you think maybe she's just genuinely catching up with somebody and really likes them, but also is as a byproduct getting information. But when she talks to Jimmy, like, there's no discussion about, like, this person was a friend or somebody I liked. It's just she just totally used her for the information.
Yeah.
So I think when we talked about that before, you suspected maybe her motives weren't as pure and we were giving her the benefit of the doubt. I think this conversation was her being completely mercenary right. with this person.
Yeah. It's fun when she does it because she's a bit more subtle about things and believable about things than Jimmy can be in
yes. instances. Yes.
You know what it is? She has more of an air of sincerity about her that Jimmy yeah. doesn't quite
Which is
have.
Almost worse because he's honestly an asshole and she's sincerely not. She's right. sincerely being manipulative.
Right. right. But like I've said before, Jimmy is he's clever, but she is fucking sharp.
She's smooth. He's clever.
Yeah. yeah.
They complement each other very well.
Yeah,
it's interesting. They have things in common, but they also. I think the issue for them as a couple only and the fear that he has always been he doesn't want he had said in a previous earlier episode, "Am I bad for you?" He doesn't want to feel like he's become such a corrupting influence yeah. on her. He doesn't want to turn her into him. Mm-mm. No, one, because you know what. Even egotistical assholes like me, you know, we think initially, oh, I wouldn't mind be going out with someone who's like me. No, I wouldn't.
No, yeah, no, you don't. And you want to be with somebody. You want to have somebody who not necessarily not somebody you would put up on a pedestal, but you want to have somebody that you respect as an equal, even if their equal is something different. Like whatever the balance is completely different than what you are. That's what makes the best relationship.
Right.
If you cannot respect the level of intelligence in your mate, like it won't work out. It's just not. It won't.
I'll tell you the best saying, and I'm not going to say the person's name who told me this, but I credit him for a relationship. The person you want in a relationship is the person that will tell you to go to hell, and it'll piss you off, but it'll also make you think about what they said and evaluate the situation.
Yep.
That's the kind of person you want. That when you fight with them, you do listen to them, and they piss you off and make you mad, but you consider what they said. And
yes.
I think Jim and Kimmy.
I do it all the time, too.
Jim and Kimmy.
I win.
Jim and Kimmy. I think they. I think what they do is they're too codependent in wanting the other to be happy.
Yep.
And that's where the badness is here. Like they're,
yep.
you know, both of them have had red lines where they should have said stop, and they didn't.
All the way back, as far back as the mailroom. I mean, yeah. it even started then because it was like, well, that's stupid. I can't believe you didn't get that. Like, that's no fault of your own. Actually, it is. Yeah. It is, you know. So it started at the very beginning of the relationship. It's something like you have relationships with even just friends. It doesn't even have to be a romantic relationship. And you've got that person. You got to have somebody that can tell you maybe that it doesn't come out very often, but when it's real important, you need that person that's going to be like, listen, I'm saying this, you're not going to like it, but you have to hear it from someone you love because you need a deal.
Yep.
Okay. Two things. One me being a jerk here, and the second is me revealing saying something I probably shouldn't, but I'm gonna say it anyway. Number one, I was really hoping we would get through that entire conversation without using the word codependent, so I'm a little disappointed in that.
it is what it is. We gotta call it like it is.
Number two, it's funny. You guys have. And I've enjoyed all the different phrasings that you're, as far as the person in your life and what they would, you know, what they would, they are the ones to tell you this or tell you that, whatever. So I'm gonna, I wrote and she's gonna hear this now, but I don't mind. Hope she doesn't mind. So many, many years ago, I wrote a speech, toast, et cetera, for someone, at their wedding reception. It's my best friend. And I believe she will be listening to this podcast. And one of the lines I remember I said, and this is, again, we're talking 20-odd years ago, is because she was someone who she doesn't tell you what you want to hear. She tells you what you need to hear. And that's the nicest, simplest, concise way to put it. And that's what you look for, whether it be in a friendship, especially a close friendship that actually has meaning to it, or a relationship. That's what you strive for in a relationship as well. And I think that's been the thing that really worked as far as Kim and Jimmy. That that previous to now, that's certainly what she did. That's absolutely she did. And she did that in a way unlike the other people in his life had done, like say Chuck, for example, or whomever. But she said that while she accepted who he was as well. And that's the other piece of it. The person has to be able to accept the way you are and not despite all his flaws and all his issues and situations and whatever, she's never tried to change him. She's tried to keep him from, you know, sabotaging.
Going too far.
Going too far, you know, doing something which could, you know, lose your license or end up in prison, all those other kind of things. But as far as the intrinsic person that he is, I mean, we go all the way back to them sharing that cigarette in the parking lot in the very first episode. There's always been that link, that a friendship between them, and it just became something more. Now, granted, one can say, it was the beginning of the second season. It was that their first little con game, which kind of suddenly elevated things. You know what it was? The kindling was there. That was just a spark. Ow, mother! I forgot.
Keep laughing your pain.
Shut up! You're off the podcast.
His left hand is Jimmy. His right hand's Kim.
Thank you, because anyway, I'm not going to finish that thought.
That was intentional, but anyway.
Oh yeah, that's what I'll be saying. Anyway, so let's move on.
we're putting it out there. Okay, they have their moments where maybe they should have stepped in and said a few things, but for the most part, Kim is the one who's going to set straight. So are we looking at a situation where Kim is kind of going off the rails in a direction that maybe she shouldn't? Jimmy doesn't have the same cahoots that she had in order to say like, hey, I love you and you need to hear this for me. It's going too far. That's one thing. But then another thought I had while you were talking about this is it's like, she does call him out and she does set him straight on some of the things that he does need to hear. But the one thing that she never has been Howard. I don't know if she really just like had some disdain towards him herself this whole time, or if it was just fed from Jimmy's, but it's like, that's the one thing that she's never been like, hey, he's actually like really great in standing up for you. And it's your brother who's being the total dick. So like, stop being mean to this guy. You know, that's like the one loophole in this whole like thing. And it's, and now it's Kim going like full bore with her post-it notes. And it feels like Jimmy's not like 100% enthusiastic about this whole thing. So, does he need to pull a line from old school Kim and like set her straight?
Hmm.
Probably. I don't think he will.
Yes, but he won't.
Right. Just not what he does.
All I'll add to what Scott said is I think, and Jim,
you're gonna have to repeat
the beauty is she doesn't try to change him.
Yeah.
The problem is like neither of them tell the other one when they're riding too high. Both of them are good at picking each other up and loving who each other is, but neither of them are too good at saying don't get too high on your own supply, and that's the problem.
Now remember, kids, always know your dealer. Anyway, so
you gotta know him.
Have some orange slices and just lie down. All right, so let's move on to the oft aforementioned Lalo. Looking back to him, because now finally he's shown up. We haven't seen him in a little bit, and apparently Lalo has been able to get to Berlin. Interesting. Trying to figure out how he managed that, but okay. he ends up in Berlin, and we find that he meets Marguerite, the widow of the late Werner. I know it's Werner, but I'm gonna call him Werner. He's Ben. That's the name that's the exciting name that Lalo has picked. So yeah, he meets her at that bar. Lalo is Mr. Charming, because you know, of course, he's Ben. there's that moment where you're like, wait a minute, she's not gonna bring him inside. I didn't know which would bother me more, if they actually did anything with each other, or if he went inside with her and killed her. Because both possibilities were bothering me a lot at that moment. But it says like, no, wait. So he parks himself, you know, out of sight across the street for like the rest of the night through into the morning until she leaves. So anyway, I'm not going to go through the entire thing. I'll let you guys talk. We can just talk about it together here. Obviously, it was nice to see where the hell Lalo was and what he's up to. And which is what goes to my thing about Gus earlier. It's like, wait a minute. How does Gus know that Lalo would be on the track of the super lab? That's a really odd coincidence as far as I'm concerned, but I'll go along with it. So what did you think of the Lalo stuff? And whoever wants to talk first, just talk.
You go ahead, Brian.
Of course, immediately my audio cut out at the beginning because my internet is just stupid tonight.
I
don't know what's wrong with it. I never have this problem, but like the internet has been crazy all evening. But I'll say that it was very interesting to see different type of architecture, a different type of place for this show to take place, to see like public transit and things you don't usually see in the Breaking Bad world. The Vince verse. There was a lot of stress in this. Actually, you kind of came to like her just because Werner, because of Werner, and that you felt a real sense of fear for her. And you also saw, you know, Lalo at his best. It was very tense. I will say, I don't know how Lalo figures all this stuff out, too. It's almost like you have two idiot savants go. And Gus, you know, like, how does Lalo figure exactly where to go, where she is? And how does Gus know to put a gun in the track down in the super lab? So it's almost like you have these two super minds going at it. But I really enjoyed the stuff in Germany and thought it was entertaining, suspenseful. And I'm glad that she survived. They did a great job of making me like her in a short period of time and wanting her to survive.
Well, I would, first of all, like to say that it occurred to me that I never knew I wanted this, but, like, now all I really want in life is Stephen Ogg and Tony Dalton to have a smile off. Like, I just want them to stand and smile at each other for, like, 2 minutes, two consecutive minutes of smiling eye contact. That's something I need to see in my bucket list. Second, I cannot remember, I did not have the time, I sincerely meant to, but there was some conversation that Lalo has had like a season or two ago where he did something about Mike taking out – it had something to do with Mike taking out Werner. Like there was some conversation that like he was scoping it out. Like he was figuring out the German connection a season or two ago. Mm-hmm. So there was like a little bit there. So I guess we're just to assume that this whole time he's been sleuthing or having others sleuth on his behalf to make the connection to figure out. We know he figured out who Werner's spouse was. We know that much. I did also have a lot of fear that we were going to have something bad happen to her because she was very likable very quickly due to her connection in the storyline, but also just the actress herself and how, I mean, she was just so soft and intelligent and thoughtful. And the moment that really like sealed the deal for me that like, I didn't want have any harm come to this woman is like when they walked to the gate. You know, and she was like, I can't ask you in. That was like, you know, like you really are meant to worry about her, which made me worry even more about her because they were like, you are supposed to love her.
She even says like, yeah, you know, like when do you leave tomorrow? And she goes, well, maybe in another life. And I thought, yes. Oh, my God, could you be messing with us anymore in another life? Screw you, Ryder. Now I'm even more nervous.
And I will add to this, not you could, I mean, for what, forever how much Lalo decides that he likes somebody, there was even a moment where you could tell, like, he did not want to have to shoot her. And I don't think it was just, oh, God, I'm going to have to leave a mess behind and someone's going to track me. I don't think it was that. He was like, ah, shit. You know, when she came home, like he didn't really want that to happen. And I also have to say it was a real treat watching him walk over to the dog and like have half of me go like, oh my God, don't do anything to the dog. Oh my God, don't do anything to the dog. And then he just like squats low and then does his Lalo thing. And he just charms the hell out of this little dog. Walks off and does his thing.
Sorry. I mean, the stuff, I understood why Lalo obviously already knows about Werner because that happened back in season four? Or was it five when Mike kills Werner? Was it just last season?
I feel like it was two seasons ago.
COVID has confused everything for me, so I can't remember
when. Exactly.
But because that's essentially one of the things that leads to Werner's demise. He's even on the phone at one point, and he's right. The whole thing, whatever. So he was already kind of on the track, of this something going on with the German. You're absolutely right, and that's what leads. It's just I didn't question him going out there at all. It made perfect sense to me. My question is, how does Gus know to be doing what he's doing in a super lab? How does he know it's gonna call us there? It seemed. Whatever. I don't mind it.
You were supposed to put together that when he like walks out of walks out of the kitchen, walks out of the dining room, and walks out into the parking lot and stands like a superhero looking around into the mist that he knows things. Because every time he does that, he knows things that are unexplainable. He just knows them.
I also find the way that that bulletproof vest thing under the shirt looks, it kind of disturbs me. I don't,
is it because he looks like more robust?
It looks like a weirdly articulated action figure. It just looks kind of bizarre to me.
Well, okay, I'm gonna tell you, it is a thing. As somebody who grew up in a household of like a police officer and knowing what like my father looked like with or without the bulletproof vest, it is a thing. It's like, you're right. It's very like it just changes movement. It is a little awkward.
Nice. I can imagine. I found it just very odd and distracting when I saw it on screen. Especially when he's walking towards the screen. Yeah.
Since we're talking about the Under Armour, we have seen two different times where he goes to his ankle, like to you know his weaponized ankle. Mm-hmm. Is this going to come into play?
Oh, of course.
Like, is this going to be like? Is this going to be his? Like, I just saved my own ass with this weapon.
So, and that's not the same weapon that he stashes in the
sequel. No.
It's two different things. So it's, I'm assuming because it, what's the phrase that we, well, usually Dan is here to bring up it. Is it the, or Brian will say it for me. Was it Chekhov's gun or whatever the hell it is? I always forget what it is. You know, when you've been shown something, we have to build to it then. It has to be used. So
Chekhov's gun.
Yeah.
Which
is funny because it should be Chekhov's phaser. Why would he have a gun? It makes no sense to me. See, Dan's not here. I'm making Star Trek jokes. I ain't here for it.
You know what? You got half enthusiasm for me. That's what I can do. That's all the Dan I can bring.
Hey, you know, after the last couple of years, I'll take getting half enthusiasm out of anybody or anything at this point. Okay, so Mike here. Question. So he goes back to the house trying to find some information. Yep. And he finally comes across that little it's like a slide rule which has been preserved in Lucite, like a little in memoriam award commemoration, not an award, but a commemoration. And we find that, you know, the inscription in German, you know, it's from the boys, you know, in memory.
From the boys.
But he sees something, it's like a sticker, and we see this, and this is what the cold open is for of this episode. It's the creation of this. And they're very cute because, you know, if when you're first watching the opening of it, you're thinking, oh, it looks like they're making meth. And it's like, no, that's not what they're doing, but I got that's what the point of it was.
Immediately you knew the connection.
Right. It just felt like, you know, it's kind of like when it takes you like 10 minutes to get to the point of a joke. I felt like, we're taking a really long walk to get to this, aren't we? All right. Again, time of the essence, you know. He sees a sticker on the bottom of it. Did any of you know what that sticker was or what it indicated? Was it a name? Was it a plate? I wasn't sure what that was exactly, and I didn't want to make an assumption. And I haven't read about it.
It's the shop that made it, and it's where the boys got it for him, and I suspect that will be in Albuquerque, and that's why he'll use that to continue to trace back who the boys were, who bought it, did Mike buy it, whatever. It's the place that made it.
There you go.
Okay. Question about the boys then, because, you know, she made mention, if I recall, that they did not attend his funeral.
Never saw a face.
Never saw a face. Question. Are the boys still around? Or not?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes, and they
think they've been
silenced. The boys don't know the full extent of everything. Yep. The boys plaque was done solely by Mike.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think they know he's gone even. I could bet they didn't even know he was gone necessarily, or if they did, that had no idea it had anything to do with anything with them.
Okay. Just wondering because they all strike me as potential loose threads, and we're dealing with someone who doesn't care for loose threads. So, and he doesn't exactly have, you know, compassion or empathy or care about people, you know, relatively innocent people dying. So why would he care about, you know, having a few Germans whacked? You know, I'm just, but just putting it out there that you're, I think most likely you're right. But I felt the question had to be asked, especially since they didn't show up at his funeral. Which is true.
Fair.
And I feel like that, the reason why I'm bringing it up is because to me, that might be the reason why you have that detail in there. Because I was like, why are you telling me that they didn't show up there? That's interesting. Again, I'm like 90-something% sure you're right. But I just want to put it out there. It's possible. Probably not.
It does. I mean, but it also, it just, it stands to reason that he would see the red flag in somebody who cared so much about his crew is that he referred to them as his boys. And then they didn't come to the funeral. Like those two things just don't add up in the normal world.
Right. And again, I most likely they're fine. And maybe he'll dig up that asshole guy again. Of course, if he's gonna go, but the thing is, if he's gonna go back to the shop where this was created, which is in Albuquerque, I'm pretty sure all those Germans are back in Germany. So I don't know if he's gonna.
Right. He's already there. He's wasting all of his miles at this point.
Right. I'm still trying to figure out the whole. Okay. I just, you know, I love that it's so much more difficult just to get back into freaking Albuquerque than it is to like go to Berlin. But okay, sure. Does he have a private jet that I'm not aware of? I don't think so.
He probably does. Have you seen his smile? He could get somebody to fly him.
Wow. Okay, well, I don't have the same feeling about his smile, but okay.
No, I mean, like, he can just, like, I mean, it's terrifying. Like, it's just terrifying. There's just something that's like, okay, we'll fly you for free because otherwise I'm going to die.
He has the kind of smile I imagine it should be like a little bird picking things out of his teeth whenever he does it. So,
well, it's definitely got like that. There's some menace. There's this really like syrupy sweet menacing thing that happens with his smile. So,
by the way, isn't it? I hope someone listening got the joke I just made because that was a very intelligent joke I just made.
I got it.
Just saying. Symbiotic relationship.
Improved 15% by explaining it.
Wow. First of all, I didn't explain it, so fuck you. I'm just saying I hope people got it. Because as the great, was it David Tell who said it? everyone's going to get it's got it. Just want to make sure. I was more worried that it got talked over and so no one heard it. Anyway, because, you know, it's all.
We all know it's there.
Yeah, whatever.
We got it, Scott. We got it.
It's the cricket.
Okay, so I feel we've kind of covered the episode pretty much. Although there might have been a couple things I might have left out. Is there anything that occurs to either of you that you wanted to mention? Because, you know, we might have glossed over a few things, but
yes, there's one thing I just it's really not super important. Just thought it was really cool the camera shot we got in the garage. Where we had the camera attached to the garage door with the trunk that Mike came out of. Yeah. I just thought it was a beautiful shot. It was great to actually, my son was watching. So it was kind of great to pause and like talk to him about just like, well, how many times have you seen the viewpoint of a garage door? You know, so like they're always so damn creative of where they set those cameras, the angles we get. And it was just another thing that I love to see.
Also, it was one of those things that just hadn't occurred to me till we see it happen, of the fact that they would even have to smuggle Mike in. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I get it. It's one of those, I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, because especially if they're right down the road, you know, you can't keep having all these guys and like, you know, SEAL Team 6 and
mosey on over.
And, you know, the troll from the bridge of whatever. Anyway, okay.
Well, I will add to that. Let me say, the one little artifact, the fact that the song Georgie Porgy by Toto was playing on the radio is a beautiful bit of storytelling to tell you a lot about the person driving that car.
See, I have to agree because, you know, if they just went with like a more obvious cut, you know, your Rosannas, your Africas, we were like, oh, but they went for like a deep cut that if you don't have the captioning on, you chances are, unless you really know your total Toto there, you'd be like, what's going on here? I'm not sure what this is, you know. Very nice. Back in the olden days, I would probably end the podcast and put that song at the end, and then, you know, then our podcast can't be played in like 18 countries.
You know what? Enough with Toto. I'm going to point out one more thing.
There was no Duran Duran in this. I'm sorry.
There's no Duran Duran. We're moving on. When we had Saul, because I'm gonna say Saul because we were in Saul Goodman's new office, and he was trying to sweeten the deal, we didn't even cover that.
We didn't talk about Francesca.
We didn't.
Oh.
So I think it's really important that we pop in with this scene because like she's our gal going forward.
Shame. What's interesting about reintroducing...
And she stares at the shitter.
Don't worry, we're going to get rid of that.
Yeah, just... Well. Those southern phrases I love so much. The Francesca thing was interesting because... When last we saw her, that's when she was, she was basically given her walking papers from Kim and Jimmy. When in this instant, this is now the way she's acting, you know, her reacting to things, whatever. Like, oh, this feels more like the Francesca we're familiar with from working for Saul Goodman. You know, so we kind of see where that starts to happen. Although, I'm sorry, there's still things that he says to her in his very first Breaking Bad episode, which I'm like, how do we get from here to there? That's one of those, okay, we're just going to have to accept that because, you know, they didn't know they were going to do a show like this. Because can't really see Jimmy being lecherous to Francesca at this point, but he certainly is in the first Breaking Bad episode.
Right. I have to say when he's like, oh, and the signing bonus, my favorite moment in the entire episode is when he's like, oh, did I mention the signing bonus? And he goes to like open his wallet. But before he opens his wallet, he looks over his shoulder at the line of criminals behind him and then kind of pulls his shoulder up to like open up the cash. Like I died. Like it was perfect. Yeah,
but I think... She's another one like Kim coming up with the saying in the place. Like you're finding behind him are these women who shape the world. Because she says, like, if I take the job, I get say in the decorating or something like that. Yeah. Like, like so you know the monstrosity that becomes. Like part of it's her design. Of course, you know, first thing, get rid of the crapper. We're not having the crapper in the building room. So.
It's got to go. It's got to go. Before we start writing anything from the Constitution on walls, it's got to go.
See, I'm still not. I still don't think she's going to be the one responsible for the columns in the Constitution. That if it's one of them, that's more of a Kim. I feel that's more of a Kim thing.
I feel like once we saw inside of his house, mm-hmm, like the inside of his house, just. Matched his office in such a way that it was like, okay, these things are definitely connected.
No, but you see him defer to her. Obviously, he knows she's good and he needs her.
Yep.
And he is deferential to her. And it would be interesting looking at this show to go back to see his interaction with women compared to men. Because it's almost like he's a mama's boy.
Yes.
And gets along better. Like, think about the courthouse, the clerks.
That's exactly, you know, where it went with those damn beanie babies.
Like, his relationship with women has always been pretty positive in a way. Like the clerks, he treated them with a lot of respect, so they helped him. Like he's men are the ones Jimmy usually gets pissed off at, and you know, rightfully so, because most of us suck. But it would be interesting to look at that, because the power dynamic between him and Francesca, he knows he needs her. She takes one look at that place, knows he needs her, and you know, she gets the cheddar from him. So,
well, and if you go back, you know, with the conversations with Chuck and the flashbacks with Chuck, you know, we know what his relationship was with Chuck and his dad. So that leads us to where he was with his mom. And then, like, you look at Chuck's ex-wife. It really would be a really interesting time to sit down and just kind of note the different character positivity that comes through when he's speaking to a woman.
Well, yeah, maybe. But then again, it's also based on who we actually see him encounter. Because he's not like that with the ADA who's been on his ass for several seasons. He wasn't like that with that person who was with the other Fed or ADA person who was with the detective at the beginning of the season when he accidentally said Lalo, whatever. He's doing his pure routine with them. So it's really... For me, at least, especially once you get into the Jimmy becoming Saul or creating the Saul persona thing, which he had a lot of that still as Jimmy to begin with, it goes more to what we were talking about earlier in the season. It's the punching up instead of punching down. It's who's in authority. And here's the thing, unfortunately, you know, we can, whatever. It's like, well, just because of the nature of society and for whatever, Who are you hitting more above you in authority? It still tends to be more of a male dominated world in that sense. Whereas as opposed to, like, you know, the court clerk or the person who's trying to, where he can get the court dates moved up, and that one with the Beanie Baby, that stuff, that's someone who he can kind of relate to and kind of, you know, kind of be chummy with and, or suck up to or treat like, or even infantilize to a certain extent. Come on, Beanie Babies of all things. But it's interesting because I'm also...
She collects. Clearly, she's a collector.
Andy brings candy. So another talking about infantilizing. Here's candy and a Beanie Baby.
Right. my feeling is when we're talking about this, you can't help but then fast forward your brain and just think about and what.
There's definitely an art of manipulation. It's definitely there. And when it boils down to, I wouldn't go as far as saying that he has like something as cemented as like oppositional defiance, but he does have he has like a little bone to pick with authority and. I think that's sort of what like leans him into having the compatibility, if you want to call it that, with some of the criminals that he's, you know, representing. Like he kind of sees people as getting the raw deal because they're not the bad ones. It's the authority that, you know, it's the authority that caused this problem.
All right. I absolutely agree. However, I also, again, do not want to. He's an incredibly corrupt lawyer. Let's not forget that. Let's stop. It seems like I love how all the people out there who hate Walter White so much, but we're doing all this to kind of
make, that'd be the bone to pick with authority.
Yeah,
if you weren't so corrupt, I think that you would just like respect law and authority for what it truly means and can be. Right. He's more like, you know.
Now, Jamie, let's not go that far. Okay, let's not go that far.
He's still a
scum. Okay, I'm not corrupt, and there's a lot of law and authority I have zero respect for. Okay.
All right. Okay. Fair.
Yeah, you're not making tons of money on laundering drug money and advising people to be killed. But yeah, it's okay.
It's true. I mean, you're
your
not
your only
there
issue
yet.
Is authority. You know, I love how Walter White everyone wants to nail to a wall, but everyone else will nail them to a cross instead and like give them a break. You're like, no.
Listen,
they're all bad people. They're all bad people.
It's legit. It's just. It is the human condition to believe the one with the better personality. Like, it just is. Sorry. Like, I'm a fan of Walt. You got it. But I mean, I'm he is what he is. But when it boils down to it, I would way rather like chill and hang out with Saul than I would Walt, period. Hmm. And no matter what, like, it doesn't mean that one is a good person and one is a bad person. It's just going to be kind of easier to lean into somebody who, you know, like, makes me feel happy than somebody that makes me feel guarded.
I'd have to think about that, because I'd be worried about checking for my fucking wallet after, you know, hanging out with Mr. Goodman.
Pretty sure. You got to keep a five foot space, then it's all good.
There you go. And plus, I'm not trusting anyone with a fucking golden toilet. Sorry.
exactly.
Okay, you wouldn't trust somebody with a golden toilet. You'd have to go into their house. Would you trust somebody who had a toilet sitting in the middle of their office space?
Yes.
See? Yes.
But they, only if it had like a little like a shower curtain all built around it. So they
should, yeah. Privacy. Privacy. For the privacy.
All about the privacy. All right. Oh, I never got to say. No, I'll wait till I'm doing the wrap up. Speaking of wrapping up, are we done with the episode? Can I start?
I think we've covered.
Good, because my hand's killing me. So if you enjoyed this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page. You can join the conversation about shows like Better Call Saul. You can go back in time and talk about Breaking Bad. You can talk about pretty much everything under the sun. Now, as far as finding the podcast, you can find it pretty much wherever podcasts are made available. Your Spotify, your Amazon Music, your Apple Podcast, wherever the hell else they are. Better still, you can just go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com, and you can find this one along this one among 342 other podcasts are there. There's actually at least 7 or 8 good ones. Trust me, you just have to look for them. You can follow us on Instagram. Our handle there is Serious TV Drama. It would be nice if we had more than like 73 fucking followers there. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. STVD as in Serious TV Drama. Be with us next week, where we will be covering the next episode of Better Call Saul. That episode, I believe, is titled Axe and Grind. So, you know, hopefully it's a return of the twins with the axe. No, I'm sure it's not what it's about. Anyway, cousins, not twins.
The cousins. Yeah.
Although, maybe I was thinking of The Shining, because there was an axe. Anyway. Can we have the...
Where there's an axe, there's a set of twins.
Yeah, always.
It's basically fact.
And there's usually a lot of blood that will then follow. So, Jamie, before I wrap up, so I'm behind on most TV shows I watch. It's just between the darts, which is why our podcast gets delayed till recording
Thursday. Punching objects,
working on certain projects I can't talk about. Whatever, I'm behind on everything. There's a bunch of shows that have come back. I haven't started yet. There's new shows. I'm putting up threads on Facebook. I still haven't watched. Everyone else is watching. I'm getting spoiled on whatever. But one of the only shows I'm only like one episode behind on is Barry, right?
All right.
My question is this. So one of the plots or subplots or whatever on Barry right now is, and it's also involving the character I really don't care for very much, Barry's girlfriend, the actress. And she's a part of this new greatest TV show. TV show's title is Joplin, and it's not Janis Joplin. They refer to it as it's a place.
Yeah.
Is it your Joplin where you hail from?
I mean, I don't really know of any other, like, if I say Joplin, I don't ever hear anybody go, oh, which Joplin? Like, they pretty much, I'm
Joplin in France?
For better or for worse, there's only one Joe Mo, and it's here.
Okay. I noticed it the other day, and I was like, wait a minute. And at first I thought, oh, is this like a Janis Joplin? And they're like, oh, and then they actually mentioned it's a place. I was like, oh, I wonder if it's for Jamie's friend.
Yeah, it likely is.
Okay. Anyway. Yeah. All right. Ow. All right. Well, thank you guys for being here and adding so much to our coverage of this episode. You guys can make your good nights now, and I'll end it for a change.
Hey, all right. Well, thanks for having us again, Scott. Look forward to next week. Look forward to having our the curly fry back to our back to our signature sauce, and Dan will be back. I don't know. Hopefully the next episode picks up the pace just a little bit.
In honor of Dan, all I'll say is I will KFC you later.
Yes.
Good night.
Curly fry. That makes sense. I really don't care for curly fry, so that really, maybe that analogy works after
all. It all adds up.
More like a biscuit rind of some kind. Anyway, so thank you guys all, and remember, everybody out there, you should never mistake my kindness for weakness, but then again, I'm almost never kind, so good night, everybody.